This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Last year, tuberculosis killed more people than any other communicable disease, more than 1.3 million men, women, and children. Yet experts say countries are not providing enough money to contain TB.
That's VOA correspondent Carol Pearson reporting. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Ethiopian Minister of Foreign Affairs calls on the UN Security Council to lift UN sanctions imposed on Eritrea. A rise in violence in the eastern DRC is displacing more people and hampering Ebola containment efforts. And Burundi's National Security Council suspends the operations of most non-governmental organizations, foreign and local. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. Today at the United Nations General Assembly, the foreign ministers of Russia and China put forth their government's visions for international relations. In the past several years, both countries have widened their trade, diplomatic, and military reach into regions once seen as dominated by the United States and its allies, such as the Middle East and Africa. Among the speakers today was Taban Deng Gai, South Sudan's first vice president. He told the gathered world leaders and diplomats that his country needs their support for the recently signed agreement to end 5 years of civil war.
I call upon members of the UN family, including those who are skeptical, to give peace a chance in the Republic of South Sudan. By supporting the critical implementation phase of the peace agreement, the Republic of South Sudan will continue its cooperation with the United Nations, the regional bodies, IGAD, EAC, AU, EU, Troika, China, other international partners, and all our friends as we work to enhance conditions in our country.
Yesterday's session was marked by sharp accusations from Israel's prime minister that Iran is secretly storing nuclear arms material, which the Tehran government denies. Today's speakers include representatives from Tunisia and Lesotho. Leaders from Burundi, Senegal, and Niger are on the schedule for tomorrow. Ethiopian Minister of Foreign Affairs Workinne Negewo has told the UN General Assembly that his country is committed to regional stability in the Horn of Africa. He also urged the UN Security Council to lift sanctions on Eritrea. From Washington, VOA reporter Mohamed El-Shanawi has the story.
Negewo says that while Ethiopia is going through a democratic transition, it is committed to promote reconciliation and normalization between and among the countries of the Horn of Africa.
Ethiopia and Eritrea have opened a new chapter in their relationship, ending 2 decades of conflict. We are normalizing relations and charting a future in which our relationship will truly reflect the long-standing ties between our two peoples.
He said the African Union Commission called Ethiopian efforts to improve relations with Eritrea, Somalia, and Djibouti a clear demonstration of a trend to find African solutions to African problems. Negewo said Ethiopia was instrumental in facilitating negotiations between South Sudan's parties, which concluded with a peace agreement offering a real prospect for peace in the country after 5 years of civil war. Negewo noted the UN Secretary General's comment that silencing the guns in the Horn of Africa is a powerful wind of hope, and added that Ethiopia strongly believes that it is equally important to promote a framework for regional economic integration to fight poverty.
Regional economic cooperation will make a real contribution to help rid of violence and war, as well as promote deeper regional and continental integration.
He said Ethiopia believes such integration would benefit all the countries of the Horn of Africa and would serve as the only viable option for meaningful development in the continent. Mohamed El-Shenawi, VOA News, Washington.
The latest Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC has been particularly dangerous because the area is an active conflict zone with more than 100 armed groups. The WHO is worried that ongoing violence could allow the two-month-old outbreak to spread. There was initial success as a vaccine and new treatment drugs were put to work. Then came a series of worsening attacks near the epicenter, the city of Beni. Tarek Jasarevich of WHO spoke with my colleague Paul Alexander about the situation.
This was always a scenario that we were fearing, insecurity will hamper the effort significantly. The security situation has worsened in recent weeks and days, culminating in this attack that happened a few days ago, leaving 21 persons dead in Beni, and Beni is the base for our operations. And obviously, we have to take care of security of our own staff. If we cannot reach people who are infected with Ebola, these people will not go to treatment centers and will not receive appropriate care that will increase their chances of survival. They will potentially infect their loved ones, those who care for them, that's family or local health workers. And we cannot provide protection through vaccination to those who are most at risk.
It would seem that the armed groups would recognize that there are benefits to having you guys around.
Well, there are a number of armed groups active in the area. WHO really has no military expertise to assess really all these groups and military movement. We do not have direct contact with armed formations, but we work with our partners in the UN mission and with the authorities, and we really try to spread the message that Ebola will affect everyone, no matter what the political affiliation.
It's hard for most people to comprehend how someone would actually run away from treatment. Is this being fueled locally?
First time this particular province is facing Ebola, so we had to go through some general education program through mass media and through reaching out to communities. And we think that the knowledge about disease has increased. However, there is, in certain parts of population, mistrust. And this is obviously fueled by insecurity, fueled by really decades of the conflict. And then it can be also exploited by different groups who may present and fuel this misinformation and fuel the mistrust by the population for their own interests. In a small number of cases, we have to really recognize that overall acceptance was good, but in certain instances, people would eventually flee from the responders, would hide their loved ones who were sick. And if someone who is infected goes 100 kilometers away without us knowing it, this exactly results in what we are seeing, that we see cases popping up further away. And that complicates the response significantly, because then we have to go there and put in place again all those measures that are needed. It is worrying that we see cases appearing further away from the epicenter.
Now, there's been resistance to vaccination and treatment, including violent resistance.
What we have seen is when responders would come to a community when there was a sick person, a community would not allow a sick person to go to the treatment center, or people who are in a contact list would simply disappear and not be willing to be followed up for 21 days as normally it is the case.
So what type of violence have you had to deal with?
Well, there were instances where basically responders were not accepted in the community. They were basically being told to go away, sometimes with some stones being thrown at them.
That was Tarek Jasarevich of WHO speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander about the situation. The UN Refugee Agency warns that a rise in violence in eastern DRC is displacing more people and hampering humanitarian efforts, including the anti-Ebola mission. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 20 people have been killed in recent attacks in the Beni area of Congo's North Kivu province and further north in Ituri province. Both are near the border with Uganda. The UNHCR estimates more than 1 million people are displaced in North Kivu, and it notes more people now are fleeing their homes in the face of increasing attacks and violence by armed groups. The main rebel groups, the Allied Democratic Forces, National Army for the Liberation of Uganda, have been active in the Beni area for some time. But UNHCR spokesman Barbara Balosh tells VOA, fighting has reached the city of Beni itself for the first time, creating a very tense situation and making it risky for staff to move around.
Many of humanitarians have had to stop their activities, but UNHCR, we are trying to send colleagues into Beni town as soon as we can to provide humanitarian assistance to those who have been affected by the recent rounds of violence.
Beni is the epicenter of an Ebola outbreak in eastern DRC and is the base for anti-Ebola operations by the World Health Organization. These operations were shut down for a few days following recent rebel attacks. WHO reports 154 confirmed and probable cases of Ebola in the area, including 101 deaths. The agency resumed its activities in Beni on Wednesday despite security concerns. WHO officials say they cannot afford to halt operations and allow the deadly Ebola virus to spread. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
At the UN General Assembly, the Deputy Secretary General described tuberculosis as a vicious epidemic fueled by poverty, inequality, migration, and conflict. VOA's Carol Pearson reports that this special meeting is designed to speed up efforts to contain, control, and end TB.
Last year, tuberculosis killed more people than any other communicable disease, more than 1.3 million men, women, and children. Yet experts say countries are not providing enough money to contain TB. One UN official said an additional $13 billion per year is needed to get the disease under control. The World Health Organization estimates that 10 million people who become infected each year live mostly in poor countries with limited access to health care. WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus told the Assembly that partnership is vital to end the disease. WHO plans to lead UN efforts to support governments and other partners to drive a faster response to TB. Most patients can be cured with a 6-month treatment program, but as world leaders told the Assembly, medication is expensive and the stigma associated with TB interferes with getting people screened and treated. Nandita Venkatesan, a young woman from India, told the gathering about the toll the disease has taken on her life. She got TB more than once, including a drug-resistant variety. Venkatesan said getting cured involved hospital stays, 6 surgeries, and negative reactions to the medicine that was supposed to cure her. Just days before the high-level meeting, the World Health Organization released its annual TB report. It found cases among all age groups and in all countries. 2/3 of the cases were in just 8 countries: India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, China, Indonesia, the Philippines, South Africa, and Nigeria. The meeting ended with the adoption of a declaration intended to strengthen action and investments for ending TB and saving millions of lives. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Ethiopian Minister of Foreign Affairs calls on the UN Security Council to lift UN sanctions imposed on Eritrea. A rise in violence in eastern DRC is displacing more people and hampering Ebola containment efforts. And the Deputy Secretary General describes TB as a vicious epidemic fueled by poverty, inequality, migration, and conflict. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Burundi's National Security Council has suspended the operations of most non-governmental organizations, foreign and local. The government says they do not comply with a new law on finances and hiring. The announcement came late yesterday. The groups will be suspended for 3 months. The head of the Security Council, however, did not specify which charities, aid groups, rights organizations, and civic action societies would be suspended. A 2017 law requires employers to have 60% Hutu staff and 40% Tutsi staff, in line with the nation's population. In addition, foreign organizations are required to keep their funds in foreign currency. Earlier this year, a referendum passed allowing him to stay in power until 2034. A joint report by three leading United Nations agencies warns that more than 6 million people in South Sudan, or nearly 60% of the population, face desperate food shortages, with many on the brink of famine. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the launch of the report by the World Food Program, UN Children's Fund, and Food and Agriculture Organization.
The report expresses particular concern about 7 counties in South Sudan where food shortages have reached catastrophic levels. Under the UN classification system, these counties have reached a level 5, which is an early warning of famine. The report blames widespread conflict and lack of humanitarian access for the food emergency in the former states of Unity, Lakes, Jonglei, Upper Nile, Western Bahr El Ghazal, Leer, and Mayandit. A World Food Program spokesman, Hervé Verhoussel, says conditions in these areas have deteriorated due to renewed and widespread conflict over the past months, which have cut people off from humanitarian assistance.
Although famine was averted by June 2017, lack of access areas prevent humanitarian organizations from having a clear understanding of needs today. Action and political leadership are needed.
So far this year, Fehusel says the WFP has reached more than 3 million people with 30,000 tons of food. He says his agency is preparing to respond to growing needs in 2019. For its part, the Food and Agriculture Organization reports it has provided 1.4 million farmers with agricultural seeds and tools during the main planting season so they can increase cereal production. The UN Children's Fund and partners reportedly have provided therapeutic treatment for more than 147,000 children suffering from severe acute malnutrition since January. Ultimately, the three agencies agree only a sustainable peace across South Sudan will allow people in this beleaguered country to live safe, fulfilling lives. South Sudan has been plagued by civil war since 2013 as a result of a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar. Kiir and Machar recently signed a renewed peace accord. This is the latest attempt to stop the fighting and stabilize the Central African country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudan's President Salva Kiir yesterday ordered the head of the army to release all prisoners of war and political detainees from military facilities. The decree also orders the Chief of Defense Forces to end the training of more recruits to the army. Civil society activists say they will be happy when security agencies implement the order. Winnie Serino reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesperson Colonel Lampo says he welcomes President Kiir's order.
This is a It is a good step from the president to ensure that the prisoners are released. The SPLM-IO also had prisoners of war which have been released some times back. The SPLM-IO have almost four high-profile political detainees who have been detained by the government, the likes of Egril Idris, James Gadet, Marco Lokido.
Colonel Paul says the peace agreement, which calls for the release of all prisoners of war and political detainees, does not restrict the release to only those allied to the SPLA-IO, but extends to all illegal detainees. Edmund Nyakani, Executive Director of Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, says civil society activists are impressed that the parties are finally following up the timeline for releasing political prisoners.
Though it come late, but I say it's something that we welcome it. It's a very good one. But we're interested to see how the chief of staff will get engaged in releasing political detainees, because he is in charge. I know there's a two category of people there that need to be released. Is the prisoners of war, which is directly under chief of staff, and also have the political detainees. We may be taken by other organized forces, but also we hope that the chief of staff will execute the order of the president, because we have seen such orders before, and sometimes its implementation is done partially.
Nyakani says the release of prisoners of wars and political detainees will speed up the peace process.
So it's not only the government that we ask to do that, but also we ask the other armed groups, if they're holding prisoners of war and political detainees, let them release them. That's a trust and confidence building.
Jame David Kolok, Executive Director for local NGO Foundation for Democracy, Accountability and Governance, says he expects political leaders to be transparent when freeing prisoners of wars and political detainees.
The reason why we're asking for transparency is that up to now, there has been no clear statistics in terms of how many prisoners of war exist within these parties, or how many political detainees are actually in some of these prisons.
Kolok is urging all parties to focus not only on combatants, but also on political detainees.
What we want to see is to ensure that all political detainees under the custody of all these guys, whether a transitional government of national unity or all the parties that are yet to come to Juba, need to be released.
President Kiir's order to free all prisoners of wars and detainees is mandated in the revitalized peace agreement signed by the government and opposition groups in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, earlier this month. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
For the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.